Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. The last 12 months have been busy ones for our political team. Joe Manis and interim political editor Jason Rosenbaum are here with me in studio. And State House reporter Marshall Griffin is in Jefferson City, or maybe not. He's on the road going to a big story, I understand. He's joining us by phone. We're going to review the political year 2017. Thank you all for being with us. Joe, Jason, good to see you. And Marshall, good to hear from you.
Thank you.
Well, I'm going to start with each of you asking what you consider to be the top story or the most memorable story that you've covered over the last year. And Marshall, I'll start with you. You're on the road, correct?
Yes. On the way, the Housing Development Commission is meeting to hold a final vote on whether to suspend low-income housing tax credits for the next year.
A big story, but let's begin with what you consider the big story so far in 2017.
I think without a doubt, and I'm not sure if it's one single story more than a series of them, and that is Eric Greitens' first year as governor of Missouri, and specifically the way that he has pursued his agenda that has led him to have various clashes with members of his own party. That started back with pushing the Blue Alert Bill and drawing the ire of certain senators, not just so much the agenda as the way he pursued the agenda, and leading up even to the recent firing of the former education commissioner Margie Van Deven. So I would definitely say the way that Governor Greitens has inserted himself and the way that he has pushed his agenda.
All right, let's turn to Joe Manis. Joe,
well, related would be the battle over Greitens' use of special groups that don't have to identify their donors. This was an issue before I was elected. It's gotten bigger since because these groups have used money to attack fellow Republicans in the General Assembly. I would say that was the top issue, I think, for the state. For personally, I think it was, frankly, the most memorable story I worked on this year was the summer where I did a story about all the African-American women in the St. Louis area who hold political power. In fact, they wield the bulk of the political power in the region, and you're now seeing some of this nationally in other states. African-American women, I think, will be a major force next year, and so for me personally, that was probably the biggest story I worked on this year.
All right, Jason, and your thoughts.
Well, I would probably also pick Greitens' growing pains and on the growing pains associated with all Republican rule, but as a way to not be redundant, a close second would be the passage and then suspension of quote-unquote right to work in Missouri. Right to work is shorthand that supporters use to describe a policy that bars unions and employers from requiring workers to pay dues as a condition of employment. It passed very early in the legislative session, but then this massive effort from labor unions basically froze it, and Missouri voters will be deciding whether it stands at some point in 2018. And while some people may not think it affects them if they don't belong to a labor union, I think it could have pretty big ramifications for the economy of the state and the workers of the state going forward.
You agree with that, Marshall?
Absolutely. I think it's definitely going to have an effect on the upcoming legislative session. There will be efforts to push other anti-union work and pro-business bills. Definitely things along the lines of, basically trying to reduce the influence and the power that labor unions have over business and the industry in the state of Missouri. A lot of that agenda is going to get pushed again this year.
Our time with you is limited, so let's stay with you for a moment or two. We talked about the relations between the legislature and the governor. Has anything happened, do you think, in the last weeks or months that would indicate that they are forging a better relationship?
Hard to say. I would say there's been some things in the past weeks or months that might make it a little worse, actually, and that was, of course, the strong arm tactics that the governor used to appoint more members to the State Board of Education and engineer the firing of Margie Van Deven, followed by Senator Romine basically saying that threatening to filibuster every one of Greitens' education appointees to the State Board. this next coming session could be really ugly in a lot of ways, unless there's some type of fence mending between the governor and some members of the Republican caucus in both House and the Senate.
What about Senator Schaaf? I know that he and the governor went at it on the blue alert, as you indicated a little bit earlier.
Yes, I expect more fireworks between those two, but Schaaf is in his last term. He's not running for any other office, which might actually free him up to say even more things that could be interpreted as inflammatory. But as far as having any actual effect, unless Schaaf decides to dig in his heels and filibuster on some big issue and can convince some other Republicans to join him, I don't think that he'll be much of a roadblock for Governor Greitens next year.
Let's listen to a piece of tape of the senator announcing his support for Blue Alert, and then you would explain for us what that was all about. Here is Senator Schaaf.
I support Blue Alert. Here it is, right here. I'm supporting it. Thank you,
Senator. To the people.
Media up there. I'm supporting Blue Alert.
What was that all about, Marsha?
Well, that was a reaction to this. There was an ad campaign that came out that a lot of people say was directed by Governor Greitens. It was by a nonprofit group that is allied with Greitens' legislative agenda, and they basically accused Rob Schaaf of filibustering a number of bills, including one that had the Blue Alert language, and saying that Schaaf is opposed to Blue Alert. Is taking actions that could not make it safe for police officers to do their jobs. So that was Schaaf, but Schaaf basically said, no, that's not what I was doing at all. I support Blue Alert, and on this particular bill, he wanted to make a very loud example of his support for Blue Alert. So.
Well, I know you've got to keep moving and drive safely and talk on the phone at the same time, I suppose. But we'll let you go. Marshall, anything you want to add before we do that?
Well, there's also the possibility of a whole lot not getting done this year. As you may remember, there was a record low number of bills from 2017. The fact that 2018 is an election year, that could also hold true as well, as a lot of lawmakers will be focused on getting reelected or seeking some other elective office.
All right. Well, thank you for being with us, and get on to your story, and we'll be hearing from you soon, I'm sure.
Thank you.
Marshall Griffin, our State House reporter. Let me turn to you guys now with regard to what you've just heard. This is kind of what we were talking about earlier, Joe, this issue relationship between the governor and the legislature.
Yeah, and the point is, Schaaf's a Republican. So is Romines, who's threatening to freeze the governor's appointments to the State Department of Education Board. This group called the New Missouri, which is one of the outside groups that, frankly, is funded by allies of the governor. He has made a point last week, was the last time I talked to him about it, and he said, you know, he doesn't have day-to-day control over it, but a lot of his staff members know what's going on there. And the point is that it's been mainly attacking fellow Republicans. So you've got this climate of, I would say it's really almost, in my opinion, Jason may disagree, but I think it's almost more combative, at least publicly, than the fights that Nixon, a Democrat, had with the General Assembly, as far as it being the tone getting so nasty. And I think it's going to get worse. And, of course, the governor is not on the ballot next year, but it'll be interesting to see kind of how this affects other people who are on the ballot.
Jason, you think this is a strategy on the part of Governor Greitens?
It could be, because as much as I would wish that Missourians would pay rapt attention to the Missouri General Assembly, I know that what happens in Jefferson City doesn't usually get a lot of widespread attention. So by castigating legislators as, you know, lazy or corrupt or greedy or stupid, which I'm not saying the governor has specifically done, but he has thrown some colorful pejoratives that way, I think everyday people may hear that and think, well, why are the legislators acting this way without, like, looking at the specific context and situations, as you heard from Senator Schaaf right there. So,
I mean, he's even done this against our two U.S. senators. I mean, Claire McCaskill is a Democrat, but Roy Blunt is a Republican. I mean, a few weeks ago, Greitens sent out this extremely nasty response. This had to do with debates regarding the veterans' homes. But the point was that the tone, and basically was accusing them of not doing anything. I don't recall the last time a governor did that. Now, he believes that this is the point to show that he's doing different. And that's true.
The issue of transparency has come up time and again. You brought it up just a couple of minutes ago. We have a clip here of the governor dealing with that issue. Let's listen to that, and then we can talk about it.
But what I found is that the most important thing is that there's transparency around the money. We've already seen other candidates set up these secretive super PACs where they don't take any responsibility for what they're funding. We saw secretive super PACs who are attacking Tom Schweik, where people hide behind these other organizations.
And there will probably be more.
And there will probably be more, because that's how the game has always been played.
The organization that you're referring to is one that I have no day-to-day responsibilities with. It's an organization that's separate from the governor's office. It does represent the interests of thousands of people around the state of Missouri who care about seeing our priorities get passed.
So just to be clear, the first clip is the governor campaigning in 2016.
It was January 2016, early in his campaign.
And then the second clip is a response to reporters' question in 2017 about the aforementioned A New Missouri, which is a politically active nonprofit that does not reveal who donates to it or how it's spending its money. So I think it goes without saying that people who heard the first clip, which has been widely disseminated throughout media throughout the state, are wondering what changed. And maybe, I don't know, I can't read the governor's mind. So
he has never said exactly. I said, you know, that it came up most recently last week at the veterans home event he had. But he has not said exactly what's changed. Now, some people close to him say it's because some of his people who are close to him, some of the younger members who are active in his campaign and who are still involved in aiding him, are still in what they call campaign mode. But, I mean, now, I want to be fair. Okay, he's got these secretive groups. He's ties to these secretive groups. He is not the only governor in the country that has these ties or a prominent official of either party. I did a big story on this back in the spring where I checked, and it turns out, I mean, you know, de Blasio, the mayor of New York, I mean, you name it, a lot of them have them. So I'm not saying they're good or bad, but, and while it's new in Missouri, it's not new nationally. I mean, Greitens is not apart from what many other governors are doing in other states.
Right. Got to take a break. We'll do that now. We're talking with Joe Manus and Jason Rosenbaum. We're looking back on 2017, the political year, and we will continue this discussion in just a moment. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. And welcome back as we continue to review the 2017 political year with Joe Manus, Jason Rosenbaum, and Marshall Griffin. Well, we talked in the first part of this program about the difficulty that Governor Greitens is having with the legislature. Steve Stenger, the county executive, Jason, also is having some difficulty at this time.
Yeah, and it was very predictable. In fact, I think on the last show I was on, I think you could have predicted this fight when Rochelle Walton Gray beat Mike O'Mara last year in the Democratic primary in North St. Louis County. One of the perils of being county executive is when you don't have a council that is allied with you and that supports your agenda, you end up having some very acrimonious fights. I'm sure Joe can harken back to even someone like Buzz Westfall running into this situation, though probably not
rarely
as much as Dooley did in his last term and Stenger did now. We're really, I don't want to be too hyperbolic because I've only been covering St. Louis County government for about 5 or 6 years, but we're running into some real uncharted territory here where the council is trying to exert itself probably more than it ever has before.
Let's take a listen to what the tone was during a recent council meeting involving Steve Stenger and Sam Page, who heads the council.
Well, it is a misstatement. But I know the dog ate your homework. And the sun was in your eyes, so you have a hard time. Take ownership of what we've done. You voted for it. You were the proponent of it, and the council approved it unanimously. Who are you trying to fool
here, Mr. County Executive?
Who are you trying to fool?
There were no hearings.
And on it went. I mean, these council meetings are, as indicated, a little bit different, Joe, than those in the past.
Yeah, because generally speaking, the county council meetings are fairly snoozers. They're often done in half an hour. It used to be. Now
those days are over.
Now they can go on for hours, and a lot of it is there's a very tense tensions between Stanger and Page, and they're both Democrats, okay? Mm-hmm. So in fact, the reason Stanger has so many problems is because most of the Democrats, fellow Democrats on the council, are upset with him over various things. Some of this stems back from the Ferguson protests and the fact that he challenged Charlie Dooley in 2014. But then there's other things. So I mean, my point being that it's not just one thing. And Stanger's strongest allies, aside from one Democrat, had been two Republicans on the council. And what happened on the budget last week, which I covered, was that those two Republicans, Colleen Wassinger and Mark Carter, sided with the Democratic dissident faction. So there's a veto-proof majority who back this change budget. Now, I've been thinking about this since last week. There's going to be a court fight over this. I'll be surprised. Singer's a lawyer and an accountant. I have never seen a county council make so many changes itself. And the county charter gives the county executive huge powers over the budget. And they basically rewrote everything. In some cases, for themselves, they added money, not for them personally, but for staff. So I'm wondering if, because Stanger has said nothing since his blow up last week, I've been wondering, find out soon, if he's not going to challenge some of this in court once they do final approval today. Because I'm just wondering if they overstepped what they can do. I mean, Jason covered a similar fight over parks cuts under Dooley about 6 years ago.
Yes.
But it was handled much differently, was it not?
Yeah. Basically what happened is the council threatened to vote down the entire budget, and Dooley relented and submitted a new budget.
Right.
So that's what I mean by unprecedentedness.
Other issues that involve the county that have been talked about a lot during the past years, that have been past years as well, is the possibility of some sort of consolidation city-county. Is any of this affecting ongoing discussions about some sort of cooperation?
Well, I don't know, but if you're a St. Louis City resident and you're one of the five people that follow the county council week to week, and you see this acrimoniousness just taking hold, it might give you some pause about whether you want the county government to have governmental control over the city. I mentioned this a while ago. The common objection to a city-county merger is that county people don't want the city to be brought in for various reasons. I wonder if this the political warfare in the county, which is I think has exceeded the political warfare in the city by a long shot at this point, gives some people pause about that. But that might be too micro of an analysis.
Yeah, I mean, you have some people, basically establishment people, mainly some prominent Republicans, including wealthy financier Rex Ziegfeld, who are supporting some sort of merger or the city reentering the county because they believe it would be save money and would also reduce duplication of services. But, I mean, the split happened 141 years ago, and there's been a debate for at least 50 years over how they made a mistake.
We'll probably be long gone before it's resolved.
Yeah, and I mean, I interviewed a bunch of people a couple of weeks ago for a feature on this, and I think, as Jason said, the lines are pretty much the same. At the county council meetings that I've been to, in fact, last week was interesting. During the public forum period, most of the speakers were bringing it up, so at least they listened to St. Louis Public Radio, but they they were saying how they didn't want the council to even consider any sort of merger or reentry, which I thought was interesting.
Well, let's turn to the city now as our time begins to wind down. Of course, history was made. History was made earlier this year when Lyda Crewson was sworn in as the first female mayor of the city of St. Louis. Here's a clip of that time.
I didn't run to be the first woman mayor. But if you help me across the finish line on April the 4th, every little girl and every young woman will know that they too can serve our city and be leaders for tomorrow.
And that's exactly what the voters did on April 4th, was elect her the first female mayor. What kind of marks do you give Mayor Crewson during the first months, Joe?
Well, I think she's shown that she's extremely pragmatic. She's been hit with some stuff, mainly the protests after the Stockley verdict, and she's been hit continued with a lot of unrest over the police department, how things are run there. I mean, there's a sizable chunk of the population who feels that the police have not been reacting appropriately in response to protests or other things. Now, there's been fights over the police department that go back decades. But I think in her case, I would say right now, I would say the verdict is still out. I mean, I think it depends who she picks as the next police chief. She got high marks on who she picked to be the supervisor, the public safety director. So we'll have to see in the next few months.
Does she have any cover on that, Jason? Because it's actually Jimmy Edwards is going to decide the chief, supposedly.
No, not really. No. Because I think that this is a process that is set up by her administration. And even though technically Jimmy Edwards is picking the police chief, I think it's pretty much assured that Crewson's going to have a pretty big role in deciding who the police chief is. You know, I think that the last few months has just shown how many longstanding problems remained after Mayor Slay left. Joe didn't mention the fiscal problems that the city is having and that Crewson, along with Comptroller Darling Green and Lewis Reed, are going to have to deal with. Mm-hmm. And the Stockley decision that she mentioned, that was something that came from 2011 that was kind of in the background during the last days of the Slay administration. So I think this just goes to show that even when there's a transition from a mayor that's been around for 16 years to somebody who's completely new, there's going to be a lot of things that the previous administration did and a lot of issues that they didn't address that is going to occupy a lot of their time.
I know that you were thinking, as we were thinking about this program and the things that we would be talking about, that the Stockley verdict was very high on your list.
I think it was. I was telling you before this show that having covered the Ferguson unrest and having covered the Stockley protest, they're very different situations. And I think the intensity in Ferguson was a lot higher in many respects than the Stockley protests. But I think that the difference here is, I think there's actually a pathway for some major policy changes after the Stockley protest, because a lot of the changes in the police department can be done by Lyda Crewson's administration. Whereas after Ferguson, the road to policy change was a lot more difficult. You had to convince a Republican General Assembly and a county which is generally more conservative. So even though they were different situations, I could actually see the Stockley situation leading to more policy change.
Before you jump in, Joe, I just want to make a point that in these demonstrations, it seems to me that young Representative Bruce Franks kind of took a prominent position throughout all of this.
Yes, he has.
And state representative. I'd like to play a clip from him referring to this and then come back to you with something related to it.
You can't tell that my life matters from some bullet points on a piece of paper. You have to feel it, and we have to make you feel it. We have to make you uncomfortable. We have to make sure you're not at ease and business isn't as normal. So we have to do it strategically, and we have to be consistent.
Talking about the demonstrations, of course, I think this young man is a comer in the political world.
Oh, yeah, he's likely to fill one of the open state Senate seats in a little over a year that are becoming open because of term limits. I think the Stockley protests, though, have a possibility of being much more significant for the Democratic Party in the region and the state than even the Ferguson protests, in part because, A, it involves all Democrats, okay? B, Franks already has taken aim at Senator Claire McCaskill over her town halls that she's mainly done in rural Missouri, and he's been accusing her of not focusing enough on urban St. Louis. Now, I did a story on this several weeks ago. He did emphasize that he still supports her. He said he's not going to back a Republican. But his point was that the Democrats statewide need to pay attention to what's going on with African Americans, who often are relied on as a major chunk of the Democratic vote. I mean, it's about a quarter of the Democratic vote in the state. And if African Americans don't turn out in large enough numbers, the Democrats at the top of the ticket very well could lose. I mean, it's not just the percentage, it's also the numbers. As what happened in Alabama a week ago illustrates, they came out, African American voters came out in large numbers, and it made the difference. And I think the Stockley protests are becoming linked in Missouri with how the Democrats are trying to prepare for 2018 and the responses that McCaskill and others are going to have to do to make sure that they're all on the same page.
Right. Agree?
I agree with that. I do think that Claire McCaskill has a path to victory, but it's a similar one that she took to win her Senate seat in 2006, and that is she needs to either compete or win in some of the rural parts of the state, and she needs large turnout for her in both Kansas City, St. Louis, Columbia, and some of the suburbs. And I think that she has a path, but it's a narrow path given that the rural parts of the state have become more Republican since 2006.
This is going to be the political fight of her lifetime, I suspect, Joe.
Yeah, of course they said that in 2006 and after she lost in 2004.
Yeah, I mean, you could say 2004 was the fight of her lifetime and she lost and then she won again.
But yeah, and in 2006 when she won by 50,000 votes, part of it was because she did all this campaigning in rural Missouri. Even though she lost in rural Missouri, was to reduce the margin. 2012, I mean, Todd Akin gave her verbal gifts that helped her rake up these huge margins. This time, some of this may be tied to what happens in Washington. I mean, I've had Republicans tell me that some of the internal polling showing the GOP doing very poorly in Missouri right now in the suburbs. And the suburbs are where statewide elections in the state often end up being won or lost, not just by percentage, but also by numbers. I mean, what happened in 2016 was that the rural voters showed up. I mean, they didn't, it was so, you know, it's in huge numbers. And so the issue is who shows up. And so it's going to be very intriguing to see the role of suburban voters, African-American women who made the difference in Alabama. So I think the Stockley protests are tied into this. Yeah.
And as you indicated earlier, African-American women in politics are really making their presence felt here in Missouri.
Yes, yes.
Well, who's she going to run against, Jason?
I think that the favorite now is Josh Hawley, on the attorney general. Unless another major candidate jumps in, the rest of the current GOP field, while I wouldn't completely write them off, they're going to be severely underfunded and will have to rely essentially on free media, whereas I think a lot of the Republican machinery is going to get behind Hawley both locally and nationally. And even Claire McCaskill in her fundraising appeals is saying that Josh Hawley is her likely opponent, probably much to the chagrin of people like Cortland Sykes, who believe otherwise.
We just have a minimum amount of time left. Very quickly, Joe, what else are you looking for in 2018?
Well, aside from the stuff we talked about and the right to work fight, which I think is going to be key, whether or not the General Assembly, because it's a referendum, the General Assembly could move it off the November ballot and put it on the August ballot. That could have a big impact on a lot of things, whether or not it passes, who it helps. There's also a campaign finance redistricting thing called the Clean Missouri, see if that wins or see if it gets in the ballot. And then there's this pro-marijuana issue. They've been collecting signatures, and if they get it on the ballot, I personally think they probably have a good shot at winning.
Yeah, I think the medical marijuana initiative may actually capture the most attention of actual people. Redistricting is fun for me, but probably nobody else.
Well, let's leave it at that. I want to thank you both so much for being with us and going back over the past 11-plus months and taking a look ahead as well. Jason Rosenbaum and Joe Manis, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU.